We now go down to New York City, where WOC correspondent Brendan Dunn sat down with Jay Habaneda, a blogger, philanthropist, and community organizer who helped found the Yellow Boat of Hope Foundation in the Philippines.
This is Brendan Masaskis Dunn in New York City, and I'm here interviewing Jay Habaneda, who is visiting from the Philippines, and he is involved with the Yellow Boat of Hope Foundation in the Philippines, and I want to welcome you to WOOC.
Thank you, Brandon, and thank you for the warm welcome.
Can you talk about Yellow Boat of Hope Foundation? How did it start, and why did it start?
7 years ago, I was in the south of the Philippines, and I encountered a group of kids who were swimming to school. And I was, you know, I've also come from the south of the Philippines, and I thought of, I've heard of all these amazing stories where kids struggle to go to school. But it was the first time that I've heard of a story where kids, you know, would have to swim to school. And I just felt so inspired, and I shared it on Facebook. Not really thinking that, you know, a lot of my friends would start commenting, how can we help? And one of them, his name is Josiah Go. He's like known in the marketing world. He immediately pledged 5,000 pesos, roughly probably around $20-$25. And then that got others to help and also like share the Facebook status. And within 1 week, we had some funds to help these kids. And we brainstormed and we came about the idea that there were other suggestions like, why don't we build a bridge? Why don't we relocate them? But then someone suggested why the simple solution would just be to give them a yellow boat, which is like a yellow school bus, but this one operates in water. And so 5 months after, we turned over the very first boat. And what's unique about the story, so I thought the story would stop there, but the Philippines is an archipelago where we have over 7,000 islands. And after that initial story went viral, we found new communities where kids either have to swim or have to wade through water just to get to school. So that's why, you know, 7 years from that time on, we're still doing it. And we keep finding opportunities and communities where our sort of intervention is required.
So it started off with just one boat, it sounds like, in one community?
Yes, and then we found more kids in that community, so we raised funds to build 4 more boats. And then after that initial community, we found a second community somewhere in the middle of the Philippines, and then another community, and then another community. Yeah, and it just sort of, in a way, spread like wildfire that we keep finding these communities where children struggle to go to school.
This is several years ago. Where does the organization stand right now in terms of how many communities and how many schools or school districts have you all impacted?
After 7 years, we're now present in around 120 communities. It seems a lot, but you know, when you compare it to the 7,000 islands, it's not really that many. And we've given close to 4,500 boats. And the number of boats increased because after, I'm sure most of you have heard of Typhoon Haiyan in 2013. And after that typhoon, it destroyed, I think, overall in the Philippines, around 20,000 boats. So a lot of the fishermen came to us and asked us if we can replace the boats that they lost. Initially, we said no because we were focused on education. But then they went back to us and told us that if they don't have a livelihood, they won't be able to send their kids to school. So that's when we ventured into what we call Adopt a Fisherman Project, where we also replace boats that fishermen might lose because of, you know, a typhoon. And that's our focus. But we do see an end in sight. On the yellow school boat front, we are working closely with the country's Department of Education in identifying the total communities that still need either boats or maybe bridges so that kids can go to school. So I hope one day we'll be able to reach that goal.
Talk a little bit about some of these communities that you're doing this great work in, just in terms of living conditions. You know, all these communities are on the water. I'm imagining, you know, a fair amount of them were impacted by the typhoon. So talk about that a little bit.
Well, most probably because, you know, the Philippines is composed of many islands. Most of our communities are coastal communities, and most of their livelihood center around fishing or seaweed farming. And that's why, in our case, the boat serves a dual purpose. It's able to get the kids to school, but it's also can be used by, you know, the parents or the community in their livelihood. So primarily up to this point, I think 90% of the communities would really, the activities would revolve around fishing, seaweed farming, and, you know, other fishing related activities. And most of them, you know, some of them probably won't have access to the internet. There's weak signals in terms of telecom signals in these communities, but they're not particularly, you know, it's not particularly right to say that they're you know, sort of suffering or sad. Most of these kids that I've encountered are happy, but it's just that the boats enabled them to, you know, get to school faster and drier. And also for the community, what's making it a way special for us in helping them is that it's able to introduce us to, like, old traditions. Some communities, I'm impressed with how their fishing traditions and fishing rituals are sustainable in a manner. So they won't. There was one particular case where I went for a 4 a.m. Sort of fishing activity. The fishermen, they had an assigned diver who was to, his job was to get the young fishes out of the net and throw them back to the sea so that they grow, they can get to grow and, like, maybe have kids of their own. So there are unique sort of stories like this that enable us and inspire us to continue with helping them.
How do you sustain the work that you're doing in terms of funding? Where does that come from? And the second question would also be, what kind of structure do you have, and how does that work?
Yeah, so we'd like to think that we're almost 100% volunteer-driven organization. So we work with a lot of volunteers on the ground who are passionate community leaders who want to help their communities, either through raising resources, raising awareness about certain conditions that need help, and also, you know, handling or managing different volunteers per area. So for us, for the last 7 years, almost I could say 99% of the donations go to the building of the boats or the building of the infrastructure. So it's really, even me as a co-founder and my co-founder Doc Anton, we operate it from a level of volunteerism. And I guess for those who are familiar with the term, we use the holacracy model, wherein, you know, anyone can be a leader within the organization. If someone wants to help a community, they can volunteer as the team leader, and then they can sort of form their own team. You know, someone who's in charge of fundraising, someone who's in charge of the boat building, of the logistics. So for us, that's how we've been operating. And it's been, in a way, it's been successful and more sustainable because we really get local, we call them local implementers, engage. And, you know, it's more sustainable that way because I might not be, like, if you take it from the example of the geography of the USA, I might not be particularly interested to help, you know, somewhere in the Midwest because I'm from the East Coast. So I would be more interested, like, in a program that's present in the East Coast. So it's the same in the Philippines. The community leaders that we have in Yellow Boat are ingrained sort of in their communities. They're from there. So their way of helping is sustainable because they're from there. They would love to continue helping. And Yellow Boat allows them the opportunity to amplify their voices through the network that we've built.
I want to ask you if people are interested in either finding out more information or getting involved in any way, where should they go?
Thank you, Brandon. For those who want to help, they can go to our website. It's www.yellowboat.org, or we're very active on Facebook. You just type Yellow Boat of Hope Foundation and like our page and follow our updates. And most of us would, you know, answer it within 24 hours if you have questions. There are payment channels available to donate.
Thanks so much for joining us on WOOC. That was Jay Jaboneta with Yellow Boat of Hope Foundation. Thanks, Jay.
And that was WOC correspondent Brendan Dunn with Jay Habaneta from the Yellow Boat of Hope Foundation. The website again for the organization is yellowboat.org.
And that concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm H. Bosch Jr.
And I'm Guy Schaefer. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.